Mazzara and Parra project to Amimora. Herrera, Cabrera, don't let the Bay Lip scare ya. Machado or Bono or Nolan Garantano.
We'll teach you how to win Rondo. Start, sit, and drop, and all you need to know. Outlaws, Rick Porcello. Now let's get on with the show.
Well, it is Friday afternoon, getting you ready for your evening drive. Your commute home for an awesome weekend, hopefully. And if I know Scott White, I know he was dying to be on a podcast this week. He was sitting home, you know, taking his medicine under the weather, and is so jealous of me, Heath, and Chris because he could not talk about all the baseball. Am I right, Scott White?
Oh, I was dying, Adam. Dying in more ways than one. I was physically dying, and I was emotionally dying. But now, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm here. I'm talking to you, and I'm healthy again. This is good. This is all good.
Yeah, and luckily, there's so much has happened since Tuesday. We don't have to just have to rehash Chris Sale and all the other stuff. We will do that. I want to get your thoughts on everything that's happened. You haven't had a chance to speak about Segura, even stuff that dating that far back. But look, we got Ian Desmond going to Colorado. We've got Dexter Fowler to St. Louis. We have the Adam Eaton trade, which everybody wants to weigh in on. So we'll get to it, Scott. But how are you feeling better now? You good to go?
I am good to go.
All right, good. Was that 4 sick days for you?
That was 4 days in a row. That I haven't been that sick since I was a kid. It was bad. It was rough.
What kind of adult takes 4 sick days?
I mean, one is sick.
Wow. We wouldn't have done it in baseball season, folks. Okay, so I got an email of the day at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. It's from Matt from Boston. Again, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I think this is the only email we'll read today. We'll save the rest for next week. He's got a bunch of questions. Number one, and speaking of jealous, Chris Towers, not in the office today, wants to answer this next week because he was like, no, we can't have not have this question without me on the show. So we'll save this part for next week. And that is, with MLB's focus on StatCast, is there anything that we can take away from it that can help us in fantasy? So that's for next week.
Chew on that one for a little while.
Yeah, for this week. Does Ian Desmond become a top 10 option in outfield with his move to Colorado, and where would he rank if he were shortstop eligible?
Whew. Top 10.
He was top 10 last year.
I know. I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility. We talked before about how outfield's kind of thin at the top. What his move to Colorado does for me is take him from being obvious regression candidate, who I really couldn't see myself drafting just because of what I knew he'd cost, to all of a sudden, I don't have any worries about Desmond regressing. And in fact, I think there's a chance he could actually get better. This was the one move he could have made to change my mindset to that extreme. So I had him 28 before this move. I think he's probably sneaks into the top 20 now. Yeah, there's kind of a drop after my 18 and 19 hitters are Adam Jones and Mark Trumbo, and then after that's Jackie Bradley and David Dahl. I think he slots nicely there in the middle of that group as a player who, I don't think he's anybody who you'd consider, you know, round 3 or 4, but anytime after that, yeah, I think he's very much in the discussion.
4 out of 5 years with 20 home runs, 20 steals. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
20 home runs isn't going to knock your socks off anymore, but 2020 is still impressive. And yeah, Desmond,
I mean, he could hit 30 playing half his games at Colorado.
Yeah. You want to hear his career numbers, of course? You probably know him.
I do not.
23 games, .379 batting average, .406 on base, .611 slugging. Only 3 home runs in 23 games, but 11 doubles and an OPS over 1,000 for Ian Desmond at Coors Field.
Yep.
Good for him. Now, what about the second half slump? Because, you know, 2015 was a down year for him. He batted .233 with 19 home runs and 13 steals. And then pre-All-Star break, he batted .322 with 15 home runs. And everybody knew the BABIP was way too high, and he would slump, and he sure did. Second half, .237 batting average, 7 homers, 6 steals. and the typical bad plate discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you look at the last two seasons, he's only had one good half of a season. Does that, how much does that scare you for Ian Desmond?
Like I said, it did, but the Coors effect erases all those concerns. Yeah. I mean, it's just there.
Erases?
There, yeah. There's no park like it, Adam.
Is there a lesson to be learned from Gerardo Parra?
Well, is there a lesson to be learned from Corey Dickerson?
Yeah.
The other end of the spectrum. I don't know. I don't know what happened to Gerardo Parra. It's true. I was very high on him going to Coors Field. But I mean, the long list of success stories there, from Preston Wilson to Vinny Castilla. I mean, it's endless. And I think the fact that, you know, Desmond always profiled as more of a power hitter than Parra did. Parra's never considered a power hitter. I think it makes it easier to assume he's going to be able to take advantage of that environment. And it's an environment that won't just help power numbers. It helps batting average too. It's a lot of outfield space for balls to land, and they travel better in the thin air, and, you know, the kind of pitches he sees aren't going to have as much movement as they will in other places. It's just its own animal. And I think Desmond's the kind of hitter that, yeah, is absolutely going to take advantage.
Actually, yeah, he did last year. I mean, Desmond batted .330 at home and .241 on the road. The power numbers were pretty similar, but the batting average was the big difference. .330 at home and .241 on the road. And he was in a good ballpark, and now he's in a better one.
Right, right. It's not even, you know, there really is no comparison to Coors Field. Texas is a great park for hitters, but still, it's in its own category of hitter-friendly venues.
You know, another big, wait. Sorry, first, the third question from Matt. He had three questions. One about StatCast, yeah. One about Desmond. And this one, was curious as to why Scott White is fascinated with players who don't wear gloves.
Don't wear batting gloves.
Yeah.
Specifically, I mean, they're pretty. It always stands out visually, right? When the guy comes up with no batting, there's just the bare knuckles there.
Yeah, it's weird.
And I don't know. There's just something like really masculine about it to me too. I'm gonna pick up this stick with my bare hands and hit a ball over a fence. It kind of suggests that this guy handles a bat so much that he doesn't have to worry about getting blisters, right? Like, it kind of suggests there is a developed hitting skill beyond what a gloved batter would have.
Interesting.
Right? I mean, it's not scientific in any way, but that's a thought that can't escape my head whenever I see those bare knuckles at the plate.
Well, I do think it suggests a machismo for sure. Like, I'm too good for batting gloves.
Well,
you know.
Yeah.
You talk about blisters, but what about splinters? And let me tell you that I got a splinter last week picking up and transporting a Christmas tree into the house.
Oh.
Yeah. It's pretty gnarly.
You probably had sap all over your hands, too.
No, you know, it was from Home Depot, so I guess they do a pretty good job with the sap. But, yeah, I got a splinter. I've only been doing this Christmas thing for 2 years now, and, you know, 50% of the time getting a splinter. So I got some work to do.
How many sick days did you need for that?
None, but actually, my fiance plucked it out of my skin with tweezers.
Oh.
And it was actually like, I really thoroughly enjoyed the experience. I thought that was really cool. Like, I wanted to get another splinter.
Yeah.
Cause it doesn't hurt. It's just cool. It's like surgery.
It doesn't hurt?
Nah, it's like a pinch on your skin, and then you get the result. Like, I love the result of pulling a splinter. So satisfying. Get the hell out of my body.
This is strange. This takes my batting glove theory to a different level.
All right. I got some questions for you. Who would you rather have next season? Adam Eaton, the National, or... That sounded funny. Or Dexter Fowler, the Cardinal? Which is kind of true, you know, Cardinal Fowler.
Yeah. First bird team he's played for, right?
First pitcher's park, too.
Adam Eaton. And it was like this before he went to the Nationals, but I actually think, I assume his value, Adam Eaton's value, is going to stay about the same. But there's a chance, I think, for it to go up as opposed to down, even though he's going to a worse park himself. Because now, I mean, if he's hitting first, he's hitting ahead of Trey Turner and Bryce Harper. If he's hitting second, he's hitting between them. You know, just a much better supporting cast than he had with the White Sox. And Dusty Baker's a manager that likes to run, so maybe he'll take advantage of that skill in a way that never was with the White Sox. So I think there's room for Adam Eaton to creep up a little in the rankings, but either way, yeah, I want him ahead of Fowler.
Do you want him ahead of Ian Desmond?
No.
In a points league, maybe?
No, not in a points league.
Okay. Now, I don't know if in the history of baseball for like the 150 years, whatever. Gosh, how long has baseball been going on? Probably not quite that long.
1876, I think.
How long?
1876 sounds right.
Okay, you might be getting that confused with 1776, but hey, maybe.
We like the 76s here.
Yeah, 18-something. I don't know if there's ever been a player who has had the same season twice in a row, more so than Adam Eaton has in 2015 and 2016. He basically had the same exact season. 157 games last year, 154 games the year before. The batting averages were .284 and .287. The OBPs were within 1 point. The slugging percentage within 3 points. Same amount of homers. four fewer steals in 2016, seven fewer runs, but three more RBIs, one more double, and the same amount of triples. It was pretty shocking. So this is a .285-ish hitter, 14 home runs, around 15, maybe up to 20 steals, and decent plate discipline, I guess. One walk to every two strikeouts, and he'll hit just some doubles and triples. I think that's really his hidden value. But, you know, the thing is with Eaton is, he's 28 years old. He had this massive second half after the All-Star break. He had .301, .370, and .471. And I'd love to come up with his narrative that he's just an ascending player. He's ready to break out and really be something different. But he did the same thing second half of 2015. Of course he did. He had the same season 2 years in a row. But his second half of 2015 was even better. He's even more torrid. So I don't know that we can look into that too much. But do you think there is... you kind of mentioned it a little bit. But they traded a lot for him. So is there star potential here for Adam Eaton?
No. No, that was the head turner of a deal at the winter meetings, even more so than the Red Sox jumping in and swiping Chris Sale away, because the price tag was, I don't think, what anyone was expecting. When I first saw this deal go through on Twitter, I was like, and you know, I kept waiting for the other player, if it was Jose Quintana or David Robertson, but it was just Eaton. And, you know, there have been a lot of theories expressed since then as to why, and the most common one being that the Nationals had really soured on Lucas Giolito, who, of course, is an elite prospect, arguably the best pitching prospect in the game still, but they didn't like what they saw from him last year, which, you know, I don't know if there's reason to feel that. He got off to a terrible start, I'll agree to that, but... really strong finish at AAA. Came up and was throwing 96. I think they sold him short. Even if they didn't like him, even if they had real concerns about Giolito, like they didn't need to be so vocal about it, and they didn't need to trade him like they did, you know?
Yeah, well,
like, I don't understand how, you know, you're hearing them negotiating for Chris Sale. And it's like, oh, they're giving up Lucas Giolito. They're going to give up Victor Robles. And it's like, oh, man, that's a lot, even for Chris Sale. And then you hear that, oh, okay, they couldn't match the Red Sox offer. Okay, fine. They didn't want to give up that much. But then they give up the best prospect for Adam Eaton still, in addition to Reynaldo Lopez, who's a pretty good prospect himself.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, there's a little bit of Eaton's probably a better real-life player than fantasy player, a little bit of that in there as well. I know his WAR was high last year, but that was playing right field versus center field, and you know, I don't know much how much internal people really value war anyway.
Well,
so.
I mean, the thought is they value it a lot in Washington because that is Adam Eaton's basically his strongest stat. His wins above replacement is great. I think over the last 3 years, he has a higher war than anyone on the Nationals.
Well, that's the strongest stat that we're privy to.
Sure.
They may have an internal, like, I don't know. I honestly don't know how much war that specific stat, how much clout it has at the major league level, you know, among actual insiders. I know stat heads are into it. I know it's made its way through the media a good bit, but I don't, like, it still seems like it's a little too catch-all and a little too mysterious for teams to be making personnel decisions based on it. That's my perception of it.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple other things. Their GM, Mike Rizzo, has a great reputation.
Yes,
so
he does.
People want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I think the other great thing about Eaton is he's team controlled for a while at a very reasonable rate.
That's true too. Yeah.
And really, you know, the biggest thing for me with this is, well, also they wanted to move Trey Turner back to shortstop, so they're happy about that.
But, and we should be happy about that too, by the way.
Yes.
Trey Turner is probably the biggest winner for fantasy purposes. He's probably the biggest winner in this deal because, you know, there was a chance this was going to happen anyway, but now it's pretty much assured.
Yeah.
He's going to have shortstop to go with second base and outfield. So, you know, mid-second round's probably the latest he should go.
Yeah. What I wanted to say, though, was...
Sure.
I thank you for bringing that up. It was important. I saw Giolito pitch when he came up to the majors. And none of us were really blown away at all. We were kind of like very underwhelmed. I remember when the Yankees were going to trade Chapman, I remember reading about how some in the organization weren't really sold on Giolito's makeup. I don't know that I'm interested in Giolito because I read what you wrote after the trade and how you think Giolito is somebody worth drafting. And he's got a nice path to the majors now with the White Sox. I don't know. I'm thinking he might just be a first-round bust. Also, they traded another first-round pick pitcher in this, not Ronaldo Lopez, the guy from Florida.
Yeah.
His name is Dane Dunning. I don't know much about him, but he was a first-round pick. So they traded three high-end pitching prospects, and Ronaldo Lopez could be a bullpen. A lot of people think he's going to be a bullpen guy because he just throws hard. So it's possible they knew what they were doing here, and maybe Giolito isn't much of anything. I'm really not that interested in him.
It's,
but you had a good.
I mean, it's putting a lot in a brief major league showing that wasn't even, you know. There's a long list of pitchers who've come up to the majors and not looked very good right away. But he still ended up having a pretty good minor league season after a terrible start. And a couple examples I pointed to in the article,
right.
Like this has happened before too, where. A top pitching prospect, he's hyped, he loses steam when he's on the verge of the majors for one reason or another. The two examples I used were Julio Teheran, I think had an ERA over 5 his second to last year in the minors, and everybody was freaking out over him. Madison Bumgarner, he lost a lot of velocity, and he was striking out like 6 batters per 9 or something in the minors, and there was a lot of talk then, is he really an elite pitching prospect? And, you know, both of them have turned out great. Now, there are plenty of elite pitching prospects that have been busts, too. But I don't think the results from Giolito are last year were extreme enough in any way to suggest his stock deserves to fall like the Nationals believe it has. And furthermore, I mean, there were plenty of people within the industry that were shocked at
yeah.
this deal. So it's, you know... Other baseball executives outside the Nationals still think Giolito has this frontline potential. So, you know, you could be right. The Nationals could have made a really, really dodged a bullet with Giolito and capitalized on what they could. And he ends up being a bust, but he's still widely regarded as one of the best pitching prospects in the game.
Number one on MLB.com.
And you can probably get him for just a late round pick. So I think it's worth it bringing it back to fantasy. I don't think there's a lot of risk at that point in the draft, and we know there's a lot of reward potentially.
So is Lopez in line to get a spot in the rotation or a chance at least?
Oh yeah, I mean, I would guess they go with a placeholder instead to begin the year, but he's a big enough prospect and he's close enough in proximity to the majors that if he has this lights out spring training, yeah, I think he could be the guy right out of the gate.
It's kind of interesting though, because if you are the Nationals or if you are the White Sox and you want to rebuild, Eaton is the guy to do it with. Yeah, he is under team control for a while, and so is Sale. That's the other thing. You know, it's not like they traded big contracts. They traded two very team-friendly contracts.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know when that's going to pay off. It's kind of interesting. But okay, let's see what else we got here. Dexter Fowler. So 1 year, or not 1 year. I put in the notes he signed a 1 year, $82.5 million deal. It was 5 years?
Wow.
Or 4 years?
It is 4 years. No, yeah, no, wait a second.
5 years.
Five years, yeah.
Because 1 year, $82 million would be pretty good for him, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, that is going and getting your man.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that's overpaying. But value up, down are the same for Dexter Fowler. Full no trade clause for him, but you know he'll go to a worse lineup, maybe not much worse. And
yeah,
he will be their leadoff hitter, you would think. And he's, this is again, pitcher's park for the first time in his career. So value up, down are the same for Fowler.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much the same. I don't see any significant gains to be had in any area or significant losses to be had. Similar role and similar production, I think.
Okay, let's do some rankings. Let's do Desmond, Fowler, Christian Yelich.
Desmond, Yelich, Fowler.
Okay, Eaton, Fowler, Yelich.
Yelich, then Eaton, then Fowler.
We didn't mention, or did you mention at the top of the show that Ian Desmond is going to be their first baseman, or at least that's the theory, and he's going to become first base eligible, right? I mean, that's...
As of now, I mean, there are trade rumors surrounding Charlie Blackmon and... I think Carlos Gonzalez too.
Yeah.
So they could move an outfielder and Desmond takes over there and they do something else about first base. But as of now, yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah, that'd be huge. We've been talking about how much I hate first base. Mm-hmm. If he becomes first base eligible, would you rather have Ian Desmond or Chris Davis?
Huh. Well, Chris Davis, I think, is the higher ceiling, but
it's a tough one, huh?
Frequently visited. I think I'd actually rather have Ian Desmond. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know how I know that?
How?
Because I think in the notes you also put Ian Desmond versus Will Myers, right?
Yes, yes.
And I think I'd prefer Desmond to Will Myers too, and I have Myers ahead of Chris Davis, so... I think Desmond and Myers are similar. I was more fearful of Desmond regressing prior to this deal. But now he has this extreme park advantage that Myers doesn't. And so I think that makes his floor much higher than Myers with similar ceilings.
What do you think about the closers? Wade Davis to the Cubs for Jorge Soler and Aroldis Chapman back to the Yankees. And we're waiting on Kenley Jansen.
Man, your Yankees, pretty slick there.
Love it.
That's some maneuvering. Then in a lost season, they forfeit Chapman for the Cubs' best prospect, only to turn around and re-sign Chapman. maybe they'll do it again. I don't know. No, that's I mean it's a net loss in fantasy. And I'm sure you know why.
Because of Betances?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dellin Betances, who was poised to become an elite closer himself, is now just back to setup duty. Best setup man in the game, so he'll probably still get drafted late in Roto. But the closer position as a whole loses a good one.
Yeah.
Chapman's value I don't think changes at all. He was fine with the Yankees last year. He'll be fine again.
But we gain Kelvin Herrera?
Yes, separately. I mean, Betances and Herrera both could have been closers.
So who
yeah,
do you think
no.
is gonna who do you think you're gonna like better, Wade Davis in Chicago or Kelvin Herrera with the Royals?
I think I'm gonna like Wade Davis with the Cubs more, but there's also more risk there.
Yeah.
The reason why the Cubs were able to get Wade Davis for only Jorge Soler, who could still be great, but you know clearly his stock isn't what it was a couple years ago, is because Wade Davis battled these forearm issues last year that seemed to impact his effectiveness on top of maybe being a precursor to something worse. So there's definite risk there. That's why I only have had him 8th in my closer rankings prior to this move. I don't really see that changing.
Yeah.
So going from the Royals to the Cubs, that doesn't really matter to me.
Well,
I think
it might. It might, because remember how frustrated we were with Rondon because he couldn't get any save chances? But then again, yeah. I feel like Chapman came over to the Cubs and he got save chances all the time.
Right. Right. Yeah, that worry kind of expired for me.
Except with the Royals. The Royals were a perfect situation. They were low scoring. They played a lot of close games. They got a ton of saves. Chapman got 16 saves, 20 saves with the Yankees. He missed a month. He got 16 saves in the second half with the Cubs. So I would guess he's probably on pace for like, 36 or so? Because it's a little bit shorter after the break. Maybe 35. So that's still a little low.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Yes.
But I still think the bigger development with this deal is it kind of reinforcing the idea that Davis is a major health concern this year. It's impacting his real life value as well.
Yeah, totally. I'm gonna be a little scared off of that in a three closer league where you know you lose a closer and it's tough to find one. In a two closer league, then you know you take a chance more easily. What else we got? Mitch Moreland to the Red Sox on a one-year deal. Hanley Ramirez should be the primary DH, and they traded Travis Shaw, and Pablo Sandoval does appear to have lost some weight, and he's trying to rejuvenate his career. Any thoughts there on the Red Sox infield / DH?
Well, I mean, it's kind of underwhelming, right? Mitch Moreland is the replacement for David Ortiz.
Yeah.
He's probably going to be a platoon player, and you know, Fenway's not a great place for left-handed hitters. I don't really think even going to a loaded lineup that he's really anything we need to worry about outside of AL-only leagues.
Okay, the Rangers signed Carlos Gomez, who had a bit of a revival with the Rangers. He was terrible with the Astros and then signed on with the Rangers late last season, and he hit .284 with a .905 OPS with 8 home runs and 5 steals in 33 games. You can tell I'm looking up these stats right now. So, you know, he got... Something happened with him and the Rangers. Carlos Gomez,
yeah.
Is he a top 50 outfielder? It's got to be 50. Top 50.
Well, I can actually confirm that for you because I have my rankings. Full rankings, which the public isn't privy to yet.
Oh, snap.
Well... These are still pre-meetings, though, so I didn't know he was going back to the Rangers. I have him 66th.
Okay.
Might move him up a little. You know, it's you say something clicked for him with the Rangers. Scott Boras actually said the same thing. He said that Gomez had multi-year offers on the table, but he wanted to go back to the Rangers because he found something with the hitting coaches there.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more about what that was, but obviously the production seems to back up the idea. So, yeah, a little bit of a sleeper there, given his history.
All right. It's interesting because not to take away from what you just dropped there, but I don't know that anyone's opinion means less to me than Scott Boras's.
And Scott Boras's?
Yeah, just because, you know, he's going to say that kind of stuff for his clients.
Right. Right. I mean, now that he's already signed.
Yeah.
I don't know. No,
they always turn down better offers. That happens all the time.
Does it? I don't think I've heard a lot about them turning down better offers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Cespedes, the first time he signed with the Mets last year, turned down better offers.
Uh-huh.
I actually think it does happen a lot, but the agents seem to be like ones that want to tell you about it. Okay. I remember Carl Pavano. Carl Pavano turned down better offers because he wanted to go to the Yankees.
Look, the point isn't lost on me that
that something happened.
Scott Boras quotes need to go in one ear and out the other for the most part. But
But something happened. Yeah.
Yeah. That one. You know, it's the most I've been able to find explaining what changed for Carlos Gomez.
Texas acquired Tyrell Jenkins, a pitcher from the Braves, and another minor league pitcher for Luke Jackson. The Marlins signed Jeff Locke. Dan Duquette told Jose Bautista's agent that the Orioles are not interested because the fans don't like Jose Bautista.
What?
Yeah, that's cool. Was there anything else from the last couple days, or shall we rewind to some of the big stuff?
Fans will learn to like anybody. Come on.
What? Fans will learn to... Oh, Bautista? Yeah.
Yeah.
They totally will. Totally.
Yeah. He seems like one of those... Like, because you don't like him because he's so darn intense, you know? But you love it when your own guys are like that.
Yeah, he's Pierzynski.
Yeah.
Chris Sale, Gene Segura, all the big stuff that you, Taiwan Walker, that you haven't had a chance to weigh in on.
Well, Chris Sale, you know, I think particularly when you're talking about a player of that caliber, there's a tendency to make too much of the differences when something like this happens. I mean, he's probably just going to be great wherever he goes, but Fenway Park is, you know, it has such unusual dimensions and they're so unfavorable for left-handed pitchers. And I remember kind of making this same argument for David Price last year, and he didn't have such a great season. I mean, 17 home runs given up just in his home starts. Chris Sale, also a lefty that has shown some vulnerability to the home run. So that does give me some pause. It's the kind of thing where either stance I take, I feel like I should know better, you know?
That's interesting.
I'm thinking about moving him down one spot behind Corey Kluber because I think it's a clear top five at the starting pitcher. We talked about this before. Kershaw, Scherzer, Bumgarner, Sale, and Kluber. You know, I wouldn't drop Sale outside of that top five based on this, but I might drop him behind Kluber.
And what was your take on the Segura trade?
Yeah, Segura. I think we already had some concerns about Segura. Obviously, going from Arizona to Seattle doesn't help. But I think the bigger key to him following up on his breakthrough 2016 was if that mechanical adjustment he made at the start of the year was legit. Him lowering his hands and elevating the ball better because of it. I mean, obviously, it seemed to have an impact on the numbers, and it lasted all season long. So I think that is probably the most viable explanation I've heard so far to what prompted this awesome season of his. And I don't think moving to Seattle would ruin it if that is really what's responsible for it. So, I mean, it lowers his value a little in my eyes, not enough to really drop him any in the shortstop rankings or anything like that. I might be a little more hesitant to spend like a fourth round pick on him rather get him in round five. But it's interesting for some of the other players involved in this deal too. Taiwan Walker gets a change of scenery, and gosh, he needs it because between the foot injury and by the end of the year, it seemed like they were completely overhauling his mechanics. I don't know what to expect from him this year. I'm not particularly encouraged by the Mariners moving on from him. And obviously he goes to a more hitter-friendly park. So, you know, late rounder, I think, for Taiwan Walker. Plenty of upside still, of course. I like that Mitch Haniger is with the team that seems to really want him. And I think he could win a starting job in spring training. And if he does, that would make him a pretty nice sleeper, I think. Not in three outfielder leagues. Don't need to go as deep in those. But in five outfielder leagues, I mean, just look at what he did in the minors last year. And, you know, the after this trade, Baseball America came out with their top 10 Mariners prospects. They put Haniger fifth on that list. It surprised me how high he was. Fifth best Mariners prospect now. And they gave me the insight I'd been looking for all year on what prompted this breakout for Haniger in the minor leagues, and that's he changed his swing, modeled it after A.J. Pollock. So, yeah, I'm interested in him. Let's see how his spring goes.
Yeah, I'm interested in Brandon Drury, too.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that frees up the outfield clutter there in Arizona. And, well, and obviously, if Ketel Marte, who went back to the Diamondbacks, isn't the one taking Segura's lineup spot, then Drury absolutely could be at second base. Between that and outfield, yeah, he should get close to every day at bats. I think there's a limit to his ceiling. I think maybe somebody like Mitch Haniger has a higher ceiling, but Drury's partially proven, you know? I think at worst, he's another Jed Jerko type player.
So what do you think about the Red Sox? Are they World Series favorites now? And also, they got Tyler Thornburg, which was a nice little move.
It was. Yeah, the closer landscape got shaken up quite a bit during the winter meetings.
Yeah.
Between the two we talked about, Davis and Chapman and Mark Melancon and Thornburg. So, first of all, I have no idea who's going to take over for the Brewers. It's nobody I'm particularly interested in. Maybe Corey Knebel would be the guy, but he didn't have a great year last year. But getting back to your question, Red Sox. I mean, if I had to pick today, I don't. There's not a good enough reason for me to pick against them.
The Cubs or the Red Sox?
Obviously, the Cubs are really good. I think the Red Sox passed the Cubs with this move.
You do?
Yeah.
People are going to forget one big thing about the Red Sox, though. I know it's crazy. I really think people are going to just overlook it. David Ortiz retired, you know? Like, that's a huge production loss there.
Right. But their lineup was so good. Like, it gets to a point where, I don't know. This is not something with a lot of statistical backing, probably, but I feel like there's diminishing returns there. You know, like, what's another really great hitter when you have so many already? I think a pitcher of Sale's caliber, I mean, I don't know what the park's going to do for him, but you can't get much better. You can't find a pitcher out there much better than Sale.
No, it's tremendous.
That's going to have a more tangible impact than Ortiz did.
Yeah, but line up their rotations, and I'm not sure that the Red Sox have a better rotation than the Cubs. I think the Cubs' top three is better than the Red Sox' top three.
See, that's where I'd question you. Because I think maybe 1 through 5, the Cubs, well, they have Montgomery fifth now, don't they? The Cubs have a better 4, Lackey versus Stephen Wright. I'll take Lackey.
Now, while you say Stephen Wright, why wouldn't it be Pomerantz? Because this is what I was wondering. Who's going to fill out the back end of the rotation between Eduardo Rodriguez? I would like to see it be Eduardo Rodriguez and Pomerantz. It makes them very left-handed. That gives them 4 lefty starters and Rick Porcello.
But in a park that's not good for left-handers.
What's that?
In a park that's not good for left-handers.
Yeah, but I think those are the 5 best pitchers on the staff.
Well, this concerns me for... Pomerantz probably is one of the 5 best in terms of talent, maybe the 4th best in terms of talent, but he also has proven to be a very effective reliever. And since they have all this rotation depth now, and since he didn't really set the world on fire as a starter last year, I could see him just going to the bullpen. So that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on, too.
Yeah.
But honestly, Adam, David Price, Chris Sale, Rick Porcello, versus John Lester, Jake Arrieta, Kyle Hendricks. I mean,
it's pretty even.
It's pretty even, but I lean Red Sox here.
You'll get more innings, I think, out of the Red Sox guys. That's the case. But you're going to get better numbers out of the Cubs guys. I don't know if that's because they're pitching in the National League and not the American League East. But I would almost guarantee the collective ERAs are going to be better for the Cubs guys than the Red Sox guys. Those top three.
I probably will, yeah.
I feel pretty good about that. I don't know that they're better.
There are better ways to measure relative value than combined ERA.
Yeah, well, what? What's a better way?
FIP? No.
You know, like, you have to, well, I think it's ERA plus innings, so some combination of the two. And
yeah. I mean, probably the best singular measurement is WAR. I don't trust WAR completely. I think it's overused, but if you just want a singular measure, it's still the best we have to work with. I think, like you were saying, weighing several different contributions is probably ideal if you're able to do that.
Yeah. Look, it's close. Those two teams look like the favorites, but don't count out the Indians. The Indians are really good too. And then, of course, it's baseball, and it just seems like this was not an example, but the Cubs did get pushed to 7, but usually the favorite doesn't seem to win. The preseason favorite that everybody loves does not usually win the World Series. It is really hard to do. It is not basketball, after all. And you know what? I'll tell you one thing that gives the Red Sox, the Cubs an advantage. People just don't believe in John Farrell. Red Sox fans don't like John Farrell, from what I understand. I heard it on CBS Sports Radio, a Red Sox reporter, a Boston reporter, talking about that very thing. And it was after we had the conversation about it on our podcast. I don't think he's a very good manager. The more I watch it, he does some head-scratching things. Terry Lovello going to Arizona now. They lost their bench coach. That might, you know, we're talking about next October, but if that happens, like, the Cubs have a much better manager, I think, than the Red Sox do. And furthermore, if the Red Sox don't win this year, if they don't go to the ALCS at least, he's getting fired.
Okay. Joe Madden's going to win the manager off with just about anybody.
Although he did do a horrible job in Game 7, so.
I mean, Buck Showalter historically has been a great manager, and he made the worst move of the postseason, you know?
Yeah, he did, and Madden might have made the second worst move of the postseason.
So, and, you know, I don't watch these managers. I don't watch any of them closely enough during the regular season to really form these kinds of opinions, but.
Sure.
You know, it would take the Red Sox advancing, I think, further than they did to really scrutinize it to the level that we're able to now with Terry Francona and Joe Madden and Dave Roberts.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, I don't think Joe Madden really upped his stock in anyone's eyes with his personal postseason performance, you know?
Was it a bad postseason performance, or was it just a bad Game 7 performance?
I mean, I don't remember too many standout moments favorable for him leading up to the World Series. I could be forgetting something.
Couldn't have been that bad.
No, I'm just saying, like, no, he wasn't an embarrassment or anything. It's just that the managers who owned the postseason this year were Terry Francona and Dave Roberts, I think.
Well, oh, yeah. I was really surprised at just the lack of faith that Joe Madden had in Kyle Hendricks. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Game 7, if I recall. Let's look up the game log. We'll end on this. But I don't think he pitched very deep into the game.
You know what? While you're looking at that, I do want to mention a couple other things that are worth commenting on here.
Yeah.
Zach Wheeler, Mets GM Sandy Alderson, talked during the winter meetings about using him in the bullpen to open the year instead of the starting rotation. There's no reason they need to go with him in the rotation, he said. So obviously that would greatly impact his draft stock. And it would also impact Robert Gazelman's, who's, you know, showed some signs of maybe developing that WAR than slider at the end of last year and could emerge as a real sleeper. Also.
Go on. Oh, is that it?
I'm trying. There was something else here, but now I've lost it.
Okay, hey, let me ask you this, because it was brought up on on Tuesday's show.
Okay.
What's the deal with Evan Gattis now that they got Carlos Beltran?
Oh, yeah. I'm concerned about old Gattis.
Evan
Gattis. I think, how many years in a row has he been like, oh, this is the year, Evan Gattis, all those at-bats, catch your eligibility.
But he's still good. I mean, if you can play him at catcher, he's still a very, very good, like, top five catcher.
I know, and maybe we've already guarded against it a little, because I haven't really seen him go much earlier than round 8 or 9 in a roto league, you know. Maybe he doesn't really need to drop beyond that, but I think it's pretty clear with that Beltran signing, he's not going to be an everyday player for the Astros. He's not going to play even as much as he did last year because, I mean, they can only start one guy at DH, and Beltran's not going to play outfield every day at 40. So, and Gattis can't play catcher every day because they already got Brian McCann. There's some talk that they're willing to move Gattis himself, and so maybe that's the way Gattis regains every day at bats. But I think right now, we have to assume he's looking at a 400-450 at bat season.
All right, Scott. Kyle Hendricks in 4 starts went 3 2/3, 5 1/3, 7 1/3, and 4 1/3.
Yeah, that was game 7 when he went 4 1/3.
Yes, it was. But he went 3 2/3 against the Giants. He went 5 1/3 against the Dodgers, and then very, very good start. 7 2/3 scoreless with 2 hits against the Dodgers. Good for him. Have yourself a merry little weekend, Scott.
You too.
Good to have you back.
Watch out for those splinters.
Oh, yeah. Although I'm telling you, I wouldn't mind it. It's a lot of fun. Take that right now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's weird and it's gross, and I'm sorry, and thank you for listening, everybody. I'm Adam Azer for Scott White. We will talk to you next week with another edition of Fantasy Baseball Today.